The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 54 for May 22nd, 2006. Greetings, folks. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. And I ran the wrong version of that song. Oops. One of these days, I'm going to have to run the whole tune for him. Maybe we'll do that on the anniversary show. I'm Dave Hamilton. I am here with John Braun.
Hi.
Hi. And Dave. We are gabbing about Macs. We've got all kinds of stuff for the show tonight. We have continuing conversations, of course, on our auto mount thing. We've got to talk through. We've got actually quite a bit about MacBook Pro. There's some, you folks sometimes take a couple of weeks to catch up and come around with listening here, so there's a couple of things that are going to be revisited, and then we've got some cool shareware that we found.
Yep, but especially with the new machines, we have quite a few comments about the new machines and some of the older machines with the new Intel processors.
Absolutely.
I'm still waiting for them to get to the Pro version there.
That's right. That's right.
Have you had a chance to actually look at a new MacBook?
You know what? Actually, I did. And I went down earlier this past week, well, I guess late last week, and met Corey Cooper from the Mac OSG podcast and forums, macosg.com, Mac Owners Support Group is what Mac OSG stands for. And they do a great podcast and have some forums where folks help you out. And Corey lives over in Salem, New Hampshire. And so he and I met for lunch. And it was funny. We got to the Apple store. We figured, well, we'll meet at the Apple store. And he knew what I looked like. So he hunted me down once I was in the store. And they didn't have the MacBooks out. You know, and we thought, well, this is kind of weird. Because this was like Thursday, I guess. Or maybe it was Wednesday. And the things that it was Wednesday. And the things had come out Tuesday. And they didn't have them. They had iBooks and stuff. I'm like, well, whatever. So we went to have lunch at some weird little restaurant. And then I said after lunch, I said, well, hey, man, let's just go back to the store and see if they, we'll ask them if they've got them. And sure enough, when we got back there they were out on display and everything. So while we were eating lunch, they set them all up for us. Nice. So we got to take a look at
them. They have a lot of them for that brand spanking new store on Fifth Avenue in New York City.
Have you seen before we talk about the new store, have you seen the MacBooks?
I have actually not seen one in person, but I've seen plenty of pictures and actually read a lot of commentary, especially that keyboard.
It's cool. I love what they've done with the case. I mean, the black one, you for whatever reason, you pay more for it to be black, but that whatever. I love what they've done with the case. It's a beautiful kind of a matte black kind of thing, and the way the keyboard is just inlaid there. It that's all part of the case. Very, very, very nicely done. I don't like the glossy screen though. Not to my preference, but I know some folks.
Yeah, some people are torn, but I think I've told you. I got a fairly new for the work an Inspiron 9400, and it has one of the most beautiful screens I've ever seen.
Is it the high gloss screen or is it just regular?
Yes, it is high gloss, but this thing is bright, bright, bright.
Yeah.
So, long as you don't put the screen in a position where it's going to be reflecting off of a bright light source.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, the extra brightness, and I'm sure the Apple screens are the same way, the extra brightness more than makes up for the possible reflection, though it depends on your work environment. But I've been able to, where I'm at, with the little dock that I have that elevates it, get away from reflecting anything into it. But the screen is beautiful, so I'm sure you had a chance to see the screens on the new MacBooks, and of course, yours.
Right. My MacBook Pro, when I ordered it, it wasn't even an option to get the high-gloss screen, but I wouldn't have gotten it anyway. But, the new MacBooks are great. It's more than an iBook was in comparison to the MacBook Pro, because the video, it's half crippled, right? As Corey pointed out, it's not crippled in that you can do multiple screen display, right? So you're not stuck with just mirroring as an option. However, the video RAM is shared video RAM, so it's, you know, you're not going to get high speed performance out of the thing. However, for what, you know, most of us do, it probably doesn't matter unless you're playing a lot of games, and then of course it matters a whole lot. Curious to see how fast the thing runs when you hook it up to a cinema display, but that 13-inch screen is plenty big. It's not a bad size at all. So
yeah, well, they're going to differentiate between the different product lines. Yeah, but I heard there's absolutely probably not going to be a 12-inch a version of the machine that I have. One of the machines I have here, which is the 12-inch.
You know that the 12-inch PowerBook, right? The G4 PowerBook. From what I had understood in talking with some folks that work at Apple. From what I'd understood, really, that 12-inch PowerBook was not really considered a PowerBook internally. It was like an iBook that knew a guy in the aluminum factory and you know, got a shiny new case. But as far as the guts of it go, it was more iBook than PowerBook, from what I understand. So it makes sense for them to do this and you know, differentiate the product lines a little bit more clearly. You've got the bigger screens, the better video, but otherwise it's, you know, it's the same machine. If I were buying one now, I would seriously consider the MacBook over the MacBook Pro for what I'm doing here. I'd want to know more about video speed and that sort of thing, but otherwise, you know, using it at my desk, I don't see any reason why I would have to do that with the MacBook Pro. So.
So that new store.
Yeah. Like you said last week, it looks like somebody at Apple has a cube fetish, particularly the person that came from Next and then went to Apple, right? Because that's three cubes that we're talking about, right? The Next cube.
Yep, and I think the Next cube was a thing of beauty, but yep, it was before its time, and Next didn't quite, you know,
didn't quite do a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah,
but they sold their company.
Ahead of their time.
Yeah, that's right. They sold their company the right way.
Mm-hmm. But the cube, yeah. If you went to the website over the last several days, you would see they had the time lapse video of people just lining up in droves to get into that place, and it is a first, a 24/7, 365 type of store. Which, well, in the city that never sleeps, that probably makes sense. And even if you look at the time lapse things, there are people there.
Oh yeah,
probably the lightest hour was I think between 4 and 5 a.m.
Yeah,
but there were still people going in and out.
Yeah. And there was some guy, when I was looking at the time lapse, it looked like he held up a sign that said, "Will you marry me?" Did you catch that? It was like right after, it was like maybe between 5 and 6. I tried looking for it on the hourly ones and couldn't find it. If you go to Apple's website, we'll put a link in the show notes to where you can see the kind of the time lapse video of round the clock, the first 24 hours of the store. And I swear there was a guy with a sign that said, "Will you marry me?"
I saw some people with signs, yes. And okay. I was tempted to hop a train and go into the city, because you could probably figure out where the camera is. And,
absolutely. You know, yeah.
Do something inappropriate, perhaps. But which looked like security guards before they hauled you off.
Yeah, it looked like there were guards there. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, shall we get to the first bit of listener contribution to our show here?
Indeed.
All right. Let's see what Gary had to say.
Hey, Dave. Great job with the show. I was wondering, maybe in one of your future shows, you can visit the topic of setting up a home network. I'm moving to a new house and got it all wired up for Cat 5, and I've got a dual G5 desktop, and I'd like that to operate as the headless unit in the house and then just have two laptops tap off of it. And I'm not sure whether I actually can run this with a regular Mac OS software, or actually need the server software. What I'd like to do is both laptops would go to the headless G5 and get their mail app, email app, and draw from the iTunes library, iPhoto library, and rather than have them localized on each individual unit and build up data that needs to be backed up on each individual laptop, I'd like them just to tap off the headless G5. And again, I don't know if this simply can be done by connecting in using the Finder to connect into the headless Mac, or in fact, if I had the Mac OS server software, I would have a little bit better setup. So this may seem kind of elementary to a lot of you folks out there, but I browsed online and really couldn't find any sort of basic how-tos and the best way to sort of organize something like that. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Yeah, well, that's actually an interesting question, or it's an interesting scenario that you propose there, Gary. I don't know that I would head down this path, but it's fruit for good conversation here. Using the G5 as a central file server, sure, that makes sense. Using it as the thing that manages your iTunes and iPhoto libraries gets interesting because you can't add to the G5's libraries from remote. The only place you can add to a computer's iPhoto or iTunes library is locally. And I say that knowing, of course, you could rig up something where you added to your local iTunes library and then it did a sync and totally overwrote the one on the G5. Obviously, that would work, but not with your shared setup there. It would kind of blow things up. So you need to say when you wanted to purchase a song or rip a new CD in or add an MP3 that you got via email, you need to go to the G5 either physically or virtually with something like Apple Remote Desktop. I'm going to talk about that too. Apple Remote Desktop or any of the VNC clients to go ahead and do that. So I'm not certain that you're going to get what you want out of this, at least not doing it that way. And I don't know. I get what you're going for. You want the shared iTunes library. You want the shared iPhoto library. Honestly, what I would do is store that on the machine that you're going to use, and let the other machine connect as a client. But then when you want to add something to it, be it the PowerBook or if you're using the G5 with a head, then you can just add it right there, and you're not driving yourself crazy trying to add things to a headless machine and that sort of thing, because it's just not doable with Apple's current setup. Server software, no, there's nothing that I know of that would do this. You, John?
Yes, I would wholeheartedly concur with you that this is something that really isn't in the design of the software, other than that you can share your music library.
Right.
Across the network. That is, of course, a part of iTunes.
But, and iPhoto will do it too, of course. Yeah.
So that may be the best way. And then, as you suggested, do a remote desktop type of deal. But getting beyond that, yes, you can figure out which files, like we've covered in the past, I think have the index for the pictures and the music and stuff like that. But it's getting to a point where the product really was not designed to work in that way. So I think, the best bet is to take advantage of the sharing features that are built in and try to leave it at that.
You know, we both kind of talked about the remote desktop thing, and I want to, no better time than the present, and I'll call an audible here, and we'll go straight, we'll veer clear off of the agenda. There are a couple of remote desktop solutions for OS X, and we'll go in depth in these, maybe in the next show, maybe one down the road. Mm-hmm. Apple Remote Desktop and any of the VNC clients, VNC being an open source solution for what's called desktop sharing or remote viewing, where with Apple Remote Desktop, when you connect to a machine, it's as though you've taken over or shared the keyboard and mouse, and you see the display as it appears on the user's machine there, right? So if you open an application and start typing, let's say you open QuickBooks, for example, and you start typing or reviewing financial reports and you're remote somewhere, anyone sitting in front of that computer sees exactly what you do. And there is a way, I guess, to hide that, but you can't have two people logged into the machine at once, at least not with Apple Remote Desktop. VNC is an open source version of that same sort of thing. Apple Remote Desktop has some more features, of course, because Apple controls the whole widget there, but it uses VNC, and VNC is actually in Panther or Tiger. You can have run a VNC server. If you go into sharing, you can turn on VNC. If you load the latest version of Apple Remote Desktop on Panther, it'll be there too. And then you can take any one of the free open source VNC clients. I use Chicken of the VNC to connect and do the same thing. And it works fine. And then there's Timbuktu. And then most recently, Symantec came out with a Mac version of PC Anywhere, and we'll lambaste that on another show because they did a really horrible job with it, to be honest with you. And I promise that I will back that up with good reasoning. But when you release a Windows disk with a Java installer buried three directories deep, that's not a Mac app as far as I'm concerned. However, moving right along,
The nice thing with VNC, though, is that they do make VNC for a number of platforms, not just Mac.
Cross-platform. Absolutely.
I think they even make one Linux. If you have like a Pocket PC or a Palm or some other, and for bizarre operating systems like Irix and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the source, it's open source, so you can compile it for anything. And yeah, I've used it for my Trio, believe it or not. I've VNC'd into my Mac. It's not pretty, but it works. The one thing, and this is, you know, another, I hate to repeatedly do this, but Windows does it better thing. However, there is something called terminal services or remote desktop for Windows. And what it lets you do that's different is if you're logging into, say, a Windows 2000 or a 2003 server, you actually get your own session. So now when you connect remotely to a Mac over VNC, whatever size the person has their desktop set on the remote machine, you're stuck with that. And if your desktop is larger than that, then you get their desktop in just a window, you know, on your display. If theirs is larger or they've got multiple screens, you're dealing with scroll bars and all this crazy stuff. On Windows, you actually get your own session, and it opens to the size of your desktop. And you can actually run multiple sessions on the same server, and you know, that would be the kind of thing that would work really well for, and this is why I brought this in, for what Gary wants, right? Because Gary's got this dual G5, plenty of horsepower for what he's talking about doing, even if you want to share that horsepower among the two laptops. So you get the laptops to connect in, open up their own sessions here. They run iTunes and everything from the server machine, and because it's actually running on the server and just sending screen updates across the network, then you can use the same iTunes library, the same iPhoto library, and all that good stuff. But unfortunately, there is no way to do that on the Mac, or at least none that I know of. If any of you out there know of a way of doing a graphical remote login session, kind of like an X Windows session, a remote X Windows session into the Mac, I would pay dearly for that advice. What's that?
Services?
Hmm?
With terminal, so you mean with terminal? Microsoft
well,
terminal
yeah,
services?
A terminal services analog for the Mac, right? I mean, I know terminal services for the Mac exists, but it only lets you log into Windows machines. There's nothing that lets you log into the Mac that does that. So,
okay, just want to make sure you're hip to that. For the time being, Microsoft does make an OS X client for terminal services, and it's very nice.
Right. Yeah. Oh, it works great. Yeah, I use it to connect to Windows machines, and it does exactly what we described there. So,
at some point, Apple may. I think we may be getting a chance to evaluate the full Apple solution at some point.
A remote desktop.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that. I've got a copy of PC Anywhere that I just started playing with the other day. So, we'll check them all out and talk about it.
Okay, so that's Gary. Should we go to Barbara?
No, because we were talking about things that Windows does better, and of course the last week when we were talking about this, the thing that Windows did better was, or at least according to us, was auto mounting, which is fine. And many of you wrote in, including Jonathan from Mac Tips Daily, which is a podcast that I had to throw a plug in for because I was interviewed on it last week. Mm-hmm. So check that out. But Jonathan and Dom Barnes both sent in emails, and I will find the first one here. Okay. Dave, as I was listening to the Mac Geek Gab, I didn't hear you mention this, but this is how I mount my network drives, and it doesn't require AppleScript or Automator. Go to mount the network drive, go to go, connect to server, however you want to do it. After you connect and have it mounted on your desktop, do this. Open System Prefs, go to Accounts, and go to the Login Items tab. Then drag from the desktop your network drive to the Login Items window. Voila, your network drive will automatically mount with each login. The only drawback to this, as Dom Barnes points out, is that it will launch the window for the volume when you log on. So every time you open up your Mac, it will open up the window for whatever drive that is. If you mount five different drives, you'll have five or six different windows open. There is a way around this. As Paul was quick to point out, you can tick the hide box next to the drive in the login items window, and that way it doesn't open the Finder window when you open it up. So that
and
is.
I think you also want to make sure when you log in, there'll be a little, or you may have mentioned this, but a little checkbox.
No, I skipped that. Go ahead.
Save to keychain.
Yes. Yeah.
You log in, the Apple Keychain, which is a wonderful thing. I don't think there's quite the Windows equivalent, but the Keychain is something that can hold on to all your username and password combinations. So that's one option that you should get when you log into a network volume is save in my Keychain.
Yep.
So save it in the Keychain, then it will not prompt you with the username and password. And depending on the environment you're in, you may want to do it automatically, or you may want to get prompted.
Yeah.
If an environment that you, you know, it may not be you there.
That's right.
Maybe somebody else.
Yeah. Well, in that case, you probably tell it not to to open your key to unlock your keychain at login or something like that, and then that protects you from not just this, but someone getting into your email or whatever. And I just realized I hope there's not a whole lot of noise coming in. I just realized I've got the window wide open next to me here because the freaking air conditioner, this super hoopty multi-zone ductless, you know, air conditioner thing that I had installed in the office and studio, it blows warm air. The thing's less than a year old, and it blows warm air. So I'm sitting here, and it's 78 degrees in the audio attic because it's an attic. And I have the window open.
It blows.
It doesn't blow. That's the problem. It needs to blow. It needs to blow better.
I
know what you meant. I know what you meant.
All right.
If anybody out there knows why this thing, you know, they come, they charge it, and then it starts blowing cold air, and that lasts for a couple of days, and then it goes. So it sounds to me like there's a leak, but it would sound to me like there's a...
But there's
two totally separate systems that feed into the compressor outside, so one would assume that the compressor outside is somehow leaking from both systems, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. The geek in me wants to figure it out, but, I'm not too good.
Yeah, you
want to
be careful around
with refrigerant,
like Freon or whatever chemicals they're using.
That's right.
Or pressurized systems in general.
You mean I shouldn't start unscrewing this this cable here?
You can try. I'm here. You're there. You know what? Go for it. You're in the office. It's not near your house. I mean, you're not going to hurt the family. So
no,
you know,
the life insurance will kick in.
I encourage you to experiment.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. Thanks. Nothing like support. Just for that, I'm going to make you answer Lou's question.
Hey, guys, how you doing? This is Lou from Rhode Island. I have my wife and my daughter on Mac. My wife has an iBook, and my daughter has a MacBook, not a Pro, but the 17-inch PowerBook, as it's called, used to be called. And the iBook is still the old-fashioned one. But my wife with the iBook, she cannot print through our Snowbase station, and the 950 Canon i950 that it always stops halfway through a print job, and then it goes into a searching mode that it cannot find it, and you know, we're right in front of it. So I didn't know if you guys had a quick answer for that, how to get my wife printing it off my back. I really appreciate your help. Thanks, and good job with the podcast. Bye.
All right, Mr. Smarty Pants, go ahead.
I don't have a couple of things off the top of my head. I'm assuming he is plugging this into that base, or is that a base that's
that's a base that'll do it. Yeah, that'll do USB printer sharing.
Check the firmware on the printer, check the firmware on the base station.
Well, we can assume, though, that the other laptop is able to print to it, right? Because he said that it was just one laptop that's having trouble, so... Immediately, based on our troubleshooting discussion from last week,
perhaps it's the method he's using to map it.
Well, it shouldn't need to map, right? It just shows up in Bonjour, so there's no map. And he says it's showing up and starting to print, right, and then stopping. So it's seeing it, and then it stops and goes into this
searching mode. I'm scratching my head. If it didn't see it, I'd feel better because then they're
right.
But just that it's starting to do it,
I would run Cocktail. I would run Cocktail or any one of the various cache cleaning apps that's out there, and just have it go and scrub all the printer caches clean. And then I would also go into the printer setup utility, and pull all the printers out, and then re-add just that one. That would be the first thing.
That out.
Yeah, that's the first thing.
Because I think the utility also has a way to update the driver definitions and all that. I believe it's automatic.
Yeah, it's it's automatic with the OS updates. Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, so maybe unmap it, remap it. Who knows? There's something there, yeah, as you suggested. So so you got me there.
that's my job.
Another way of, you know, if he does have a... I was just saying, this is probably a USB printer, right?
It's definitely a USB printer, yeah.
Okay.
Because if it was parallel, that'd be really weird.
Seeing as the Mac doesn't have a parallel ball.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was going to say IP would be a little different because at least the IP printers I have around here, there's a couple of different ways that you can connect to them, either AppleTalk or I believe it's LPR, LPD, the IP protocol to print to it. And sometimes some are better than others, or as you pointed out, Bonjour.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure this one...
For the USB, I think your options are kind of limited. And again, you may want to see if there's a firmware update for the base station. There may be a little... Yeah. Bug in there, even though it does work in some situations.
Well, yeah,
every now and then they do.
And even updating the airport software on the machine that's having trouble too would be an option there.
Because I've noticed that's like with my mom has a Mac, and every now and then, you know, every time I come and visit, every now and then I run software update because I really don't want her to go through that. And you know, every now and then when I stop by, every couple of weeks, there is probably some software update I have to apply. So make sure you're up to date on your software updates. Set the frequency, you know, maybe to be a bit more frequent, or you know, set it to do the updates if you don't already.
Like Ron Popeil likes to say, set it and forget it. Right?
Yeah, I set mine daily. The software updates. Now I don't know if software update is default on a default install, if it's set to check.
It's I think it's set to check weekly.
Is it?
Yeah.
Weekly. Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. All right. Let's
okay, you threw me a curveball there.
Let's dive into the Mac. Yeah, that's my pleasure. That's what I'm here for. You set them up, I'll knock them down. all right, let's talk about this MacBook Pro thing.
Hey guys. Hi. I just got done listening to your show. I can't remember the number or anything like that. One of the most recent ones. Anyway, you were talking about the MacBook Pro and the overheating and the thermal paste and yada, 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 yada. And I just had a couple of comments for you. One, I only noticed because I was forced into the Windows world several years ago and slowly making our way back into the Mac world. But anyway, thermal grease or thermal paste is actually, literally, you're supposed to have a paper-thin amount. You're not supposed to be making a barrier of thermal grease or thermal paint between the heatsink and the processor. What the thermal grease is actually supposed to do is just fill in any cracks or imperfections in the material between the two so that you have a nice uniform area for the heat to dissipate through so that you don't have gaps and areas where heat's actually going to build up, that kind of thing. Number two, what you said about why would you open your, you know, MacBook Pro is absolutely real and true. However, being a bit of a hardware geek myself, because of Windows and the fact that the way Windows is set up so that it almost forces you to do your own service or pay someone through the nose to do it. Anyone out there who has ever had to deal with things like this in Windows, your mentality is almost that you want to just get it over with and do it yourself.
Yeah.
I know that Mac service is far superior to Microsoft and the companies that make their machines that run Windows. But, you know, you're absolutely right, but there is, I guess I'm just kind of trying to point out a reason why people may think that way or feel that way. Anyway, love the show. Hope this wasn't too long for you. I will talk to you soon. This is Kevin in San Antonio. Okay, if I didn't tell you, bye.
Hey, my name is Barbara, and I wanted to make a comment in reference to something that was said on the May 8th show. You were discussing the MacBook Pro's heat difficulty and suggested calling Apple. Mm-hmm. Well, yesterday, I called Apple, spoke with two product specialists, and was told that my 117-degree reaching MacBook Pro is within specs.
What?
Because this is not a laptop computer, it's a portable computer, and the case is actually part of the cooling system. So unless it's throwing sparks, melting the case, or actually in flames, Apple says that it's acceptable. So I just wanted to let you know. If you'd like to contact me.
Very interesting. Good advice from our friend Kevin, and very interesting report from Barbara there about what's going on with the MacBook Pros. So
yeah, now I'm going to toss out an initial thing here.
Okay.
Now, number one, if you go to the Apple site in their document database, article number 30612, we'll provide a link to it, has a little ditty about Apple notebooks and operating temperature, and they pretty much say this. They say, I won't read the whole thing, but essentially they're hinting at the fact that your laptop, notebook, because they don't use the word laptop, make it a wee bit warm. And I think part of this is due to the fact that they are using metal, the metal of the case, to dissipate the heat. Now, this is not unique to Apple, though. Several other vendors, like Acer, for example, I know some coworkers have Acer machines that have metal cases, and you got to get rid of the heat somehow. It's either through the metal case of the machine, or a lot of machines, like the one that I do have, the Inspiron, has these ugly, horrible heat sinks inside, finned heat sinks, and it makes the machine kind of chunky and all that. But we'll link to this article, but they basically say, you know, you may not want to put it on your skin. Now, and also, technically, I did do a bit of research, and according to, I don't have the standard in front of me, but your skin starts getting affected at around 122 degrees Fahrenheit. So yep. I guess the statement that I believe it was 117, she said?
Yeah, for hers, yeah.
Pretty darn close to a temperature that can harm you. And I've noticed this also, not just with my current PowerBook G4, but prior machines, they do get a bit toasty. So on the other hand, have you seen some of the articles that are talking about the paste issue?
Yeah, I have. And the one interesting thing
they
about...
They glop it on there. I'm sorry. Somebody's doing something wrong, in my personal opinion. They're glopping it on there. I agree with the first caller. You should not be dumping it on there like that. From the pictures I've seen, somebody dumped way too much, and it's not acting as a dissipator. It's acting as an insulator. It's
right,
it's,
and that's what will happen
if
there's too much on there. That's right. I'm curious to hear from someone whose machine has actually been through Apple support to see if they're fixing it. Of course, there was the whole service manual thing, and we don't know what version of the service manual that is, if that's the current one they're using, or if perhaps it was an old one. Who knows if they've changed anything internally. But I'd be curious to hear from someone who's had their MacBook in for service, MacBook Pro, rather, in for service, to see if anything's different. Because according to the reports, the folks that have gone in and ripped open their MacBook Pros and reapplied the thermal paste to, I don't want to say correctly, because of course it's incorrect according to the service manual we saw, but correctly in terms of every other manual out there, where they put it on, like you said, very thin layer, just to sort of help transfer the heat to the heat sinks and then to the fans. They say that once they do that, the fans actually come on much sooner, but their operating temperature goes way down. And I have noticed, you know, now that I know where to look, I never noticed, believe it or not, I never noticed a problem. I mean, nothing that would make me not use it when putting it on my lap. Of course, being a drummer during the summer months, I wind up playing with sticks on my knees all the time. So perhaps I'm a little more calloused than the average Joe. But it was warm, like I said, but not horrible. However, you know, it is warm. It is hot to the touch above the function keys there. It, you know, it's very, very hot to the touch. There was an update to the system management console, or SMC, I forget what they call it.
SMC chip. Yeah.
The SMC chip, which is essentially the chip that controls a lot of these functions. There was an update to that, a firmware update that came out last week. I don't know that my machine is running any cooler. Mine was never really running. I never saw it in the 80s, though, and I'm talking about 80 degree centigrade, Celsius. There's a kernel, well, a combination application and kernel extension out there called Core Duo Temp that we'll link to. If you're running any of the Core Duo machines, you can install this, and then you can actually see the temp of your processor. Mine ranges anywhere between 62 and probably 72 to 75 degrees centigrade. And but I've never really heard the fans come on full blast. I did hear them come on full blast when I was doing the update, as they are supposed to. But other than that, I've never heard them crank up. And I've been doing a lot of stuff where the processor is at full tilt all the time. So maybe there is something going on here. It sure sounds like something's not triggering quite right. But who knows who knows what Apple had in mind? So it's hard to
know. Few things to toss in here. So number one, you got to be careful about. Did you hear about the little issue that Something Awful had with?
That was the article I was talking about. Yeah, where they posted the service manual, the link to the service manual. Correct. Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we did. Okay, so that's just silliness. You can't get in trouble for linking to something.
No, I don't think so.
But there are also several products. Now, for those that do have the Mac or other laptops that do use metal in the case to dissipate heat, there are several products that I did find. One which looks very nice, and I think this is specifically for Apple. It's from Rain Design, and it's called Lapwork.
All right.
And it's a kind of nifty little device that basically, and all these devices basically separate your skin from the computer itself, and they do various things that could actually make it a more pleasant experience to actually use the machine. So I found Lapwork from Rain Design.
And what is it? Describe what Lapwork is, so because for all the people that are in their cars.
It's a kind of a cradle, I guess, where you put the machine in it, and then it has some. It's really hard to describe. We will link to the product page.
Okay.
But it basically is kind of a carrier. So you put the Mac into this thing. There's a frame, and then below the frame, it has two
cushions, padded cushions. Is that the one I've seen?
Padded cushions. Okay. That basically, those are what are touching your lap, and then they also kind of swivel a little bit. So if you move the laptop back and forth, it actually kind of moves with you, and it appears to be actually a more pleasant experience than actually having it physically on your lap. Another one was called I found XPad Laptop Heat Shield from Sewell Direct, and and another thing that looks kind of neat, and I think we've seen this before, something called, I think, Casemate. It's a handle.
Okay.
And we saw those actually for some of the past PowerBook machines, which is like a little handle that goes onto the sides of the machine, and they claim that this device, in addition to being something that will elevate the machine, number one, it's a handle, of course.
Sure.
But then number two is that you have it on a flat surface. It will act as a something that will elevate the machine to provide airflow below it. Because the one thing you don't want to do, I think, with a lot of computers, especially the ones that use the metal in the case that dissipate the heat, is to have it on any material that does not allow airflow on the bottom.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to set the thing on a pillow.
Unfortunately, I do sometimes, when I'm, about to, before, I doze off for the night, sometimes I'll... be in bed, and I'll put it either, on the blanket or on my shirt, and sometimes I'll hear the fan kick up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is, not allowing the airflow that I think they originally intended, because, little feet on the bottom of the machine do create a little area for the heat to go away. So I think in this case, Apple is, may get a nastygram about this from someone somewhere, but it sounds like they may have made some sort of mistake.
Like I said, I'm curious to see, some of the reports that I've read indicate that the folks that have sent it in through service, obviously, Barbara was unable to get hers in to get it serviced. They simply told her, nope, that's working just fine. Some of the folks that I'd read, I thought they were saying that if they'd sent it in through service, that things were better, but perhaps I misunderstood. So I'd love to hear from any of you out there if you've had any experience with that, even if it's the same as what Barbara heard, or if it was something different. It's just interesting.
And it sounds now Apple is in the denial state.
That's right.
Into the acceptance
state. That's right. Yeah.
We've seen this in the past too. Now, sure. The one thing is it is essentially a Rev 1.0 machine. It's one of the first machines that has the Intel Core Duo, which does have, because I found this too, Intel talks about it, they have the Intel Advanced Thermal Manager with per core digital temperature sensors. So. Yep. The chip definitely has the sensing ability on each core to tell somebody somewhere how hot it's getting. So how you deal with it is another story.
Right. Yeah. And, remember, with the PowerBooks, you had one of the very first titanium PowerBooks, John. And you got you
that
got
did
yeah.
Not have an issue.
And well, and you had you know you sent it in for something. I don't know, maybe at the 18-month mark, you had AppleCare. And I remember you got it back and you said, oh, yeah, this is great. They beefed up the frame and they obviously put in more support in here. And clearly, you know, some of the learning that they'd had from the support experience, A, updated the design for future laptops, and B, was integrated into the support process so that any of these laptops that came in, you know, they probably took the most common issues and just said, look, anytime one of these comes in, put this part in there and beef this thing up, and that way we won't, you know, we won't see it again. Because frankly, they, you know, they don't want your laptop to come back. Obviously, it costs them money. So
yeah, the TieBook was a great machine. I think it was a little bit fragile, but as you stated,
yeah, I mean, yours was mine. You know, I got one maybe a year after you, and so it was through a couple of revisions, and mine was much more stable initially than yours was. Of course, yours after it went through it. After it went through that AppleCare experience, was just fine. So, you know, we may be a little premature on this, at least in terms of, you know, the history of what's gone on with Apple and this stuff. I wonder if by the 6 month mark, you know, by maybe July, August, we might start seeing some of these things get fixed, sort of almost unspoken in the repair process. So,
yeah, and because Apple is definitely put under a microscope by the media.
Absolutely.
In general, any little thing. So this could certainly be, I'm not sure though, but it could certainly be just a, you know, a particular production run that just something went wacky.
Yeah.
And it could just be a bunch of very vocal people where it could be a handful of units out of thousands.
I don't.
And these people just scream.
I'm starting to. I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, well, you don't hear from the people that are happy.
No, you rarely do. That's right. Yeah, that's true.
They don't call AppleCare saying, hi, you know, everything's great. Yeah, I just wanted to call and say,
I wanted to wait on hold
wonderful.
For 30 minutes and tell you this is great. Yeah, it just doesn't happen.
And Apple people tend to be vocal, but as they probably should be because you're paying somewhat of a premium.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah,
anyways,
like you said, I mean, Apple's not only is Apple watched very much in the press, but remember, this is the first round of their Intel machines, so they've got to you know play the PR game carefully to navigate these waters and make sure that you know. And I'm not speaking from the consumer's point of view here. Of course, I'm speaking from Apple's point of view, but they need this to be a success in the media, and so maybe it's you know deal with the complaints that happen here and there. And then fix it at the 5 or 6 month mark, you know you don't I don't know who knows.
I gotta say, I mean they've done this. You know, this is another major switch for them. They went from Motorola to PowerPC. Now they're going from PowerPC, and you know each time they switch processors, which is a monumental feat in itself to get everything to work when you switch a processor, especially a different architecture. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Going to the PowerPC wasn't probably quite as dramatic, but still, I got to give them credit that it works at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it, like I said, it pretty much works fine. And so, is my phone ringing? No, okay.
Then, so, is that the red phone?
Yeah, it's the phone telling us that we're starting to overstay our welcome with our lovely listeners here. You know, we've had a lot of comments in from all of you, and of course you can send those in to 206-666-GEEK if you want to phone them in while you're driving. There was
no,
one.
No.
Yeah, they do it all the time. It's cool. You got to use a headset in some states.
What's not? I don't like people that drive and talk.
People have been driving and talking for years.
Yeah, they don't all do it too well though.
Yeah, if you're sitting in the car,
too.
If you're sitting in the car next to me. You and I can have a conversation.
Well, that's fine.
No problem.
That's fine. But I can almost always, when I see a vehicle speeding up, slowing down, 99 times out of 100, it's somebody yacking on their cell phone.
Futzing with the cell phone, trying to dial it, answering it, picking it up off the floor, that's dangerous. Once you're like moving and talking with the thing on your head, the headset going, what's the difference, right? Same thing.
I disagree.
I think it's still...
We'll leave that for another show.
Statistically, the radio, futzing with the radio is still more dangerous than having a cell phone in the car, as far as I remember.
Maybe it's the type of conversations. But I think if you're in a heated conversation, you may tend to let some of that emotion get into your driving, which is bad.
Yeah, but that's true whether you're talking to someone in the car or someone in Kalamazoo. doesn't matter. Same thing. Oh, hey, so wow. Speaking of communications, the iGlasses has long been one of my favorite plugins for iChat, and I wanted to throw in something here. ChatFX from Script Software enhances iChat in ways you iChat for video in ways you couldn't possibly imagine, or maybe you could. It lets you kind of morph your head. It give the whole, you know, funhouse mirror effect. You can do the stencil thing and make yourself look like you're in what? The video for Aha's Take on Me. You can do all this great stuff. And I just downloaded it today and couldn't help but mention it. So there we go. And that wraps it up. They need to go to Podcast Expo, Portable Media Expo in September. You're downloading this from CashFly. If you want to advertise, contact the Backbeat Media Podcast Network and send your comments into MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com. Show notes up soon at MacGeekGab.com. Stay subscribed.
Please.
Don't get caught.
And don't talk and drive.
They can talk and drive if they call us, though.